that's okay.
I'd like to thank Ovaid for having me down here to Cork. I haven't been here for a long time, so it's lovely to have an excuse like this to come. I'm going to just start reading. I know the worst thing you can do when you get up to a mic is talk about your poems. So I'm going to read a poem to introduce myself and the first topic which I address. I know that when you write your first collection, there's kind of a little bit of pressure, you know, to reveal a bit of your, reveal your muses, really. The morning I was born, it was snowing, the whitest tears that ever fell. My father held his frosty breath as he begged for petrol at a closed station. My mother, raw, recovering after 14 injections of pethidine. How she dances down the corridor, her silk kimono billowing in the icy winds, one for him, one for me, playing hopscotch on the tiled floor of the nursery. She casts a cry from the window, pink turning purple in the snow. His waiting arms intercept, understand the division of labour. Pink and blue, she cries. She is woken by his voice. I'm here at last, he sighs, taking her hand, turning to see the babies, snowflakes falling off his cap onto their tiny faces. So you might gather from that I was one of two. I was one of two, and my twin, who's called Andy, is profoundly autistic. And this is a poem based on my memory, a very vivid memory of his going to Dublin when we were about six. So he was sent to, but you're going to hear the whole story of this. And I don't know if any of you remember Sandy Shaw winning the Eurovision. And she won it with a song called Puppet on a String. Puppet on a String. I never saw your small room, only the contractions of the walls at home when you were packed away. All on the list into your hired suitcase. I wondered whether you liked wearing the dressing gown and slippers. I needed the light on to sleep. Home was not the same without you, especially at bedtime. As days went into weeks, each night we all knelt down and joined our hands. My mother led the God Bless Andy up in Dublin, far away from home. I couldn't really understand why you had to go. I couldn't understand what you did all day. When it came to meal times, did you get mashed potato and homemade bread? And when you were lonely at night, rocking from side to side, did you look at the moon? I hoped you were at home to the scene of tranquility. They got on the phone and told us you cried for 3 days. I think they all thought you weren't able to produce real tears. Though you were homesick, I was glad when they said you could sing Puppet on a String. So I sang the words for you. I wonder if someday that you'd say that, someday that you'd say you want to come home. On our first visit to Stewart's Hospital, we took a long search to find you. I spotted you behind the chicken wire fence at the bottom of the clay yard. My parents said later you were pale and thin, no roses in your cheeks. You were making wipers with your hands, barely glanced at us, but I noticed the eyelid flicker. Your gladness we had come. When we left, I said, we can't leave him alone. It's too big here. He knows no one. If I could have said, There's only half of me at home as it seemed the way I would. Instead, I looked through the windows of the train at the world unraveling, spelling out two words on the foggy glass. Andy, home. The next poem is about Mayo, where I was brought up, and I still say I'm from Mayo, even though I've gone from it a long time ago. But I suppose this poem captures some of the reasons that I'm fond of it. Earth's Mother, and there's a little epigraph from Mary Oliver. I thought the earth remembered me, she took me back so tenderly. A July day, dawn comes up through the yellow roots of the old grass, the green stubble of the new. Our play fields stretch out over Clew Bay, journeys charted in faraway places until it is time to say goodbye to the stones in the stream where I built a pool for my doll, to Pocadairy where I gathered flowers for the May procession, to my train no longer running on the thick fence of the meadow, to my fancy home in the fairy fort on the far hill, Crowpatrick changing station as I moved around 40 acres of marshy ground, the search for goat herds on Crookmullie, the nanny goat's milk squirted into my eyes, our laughs echoing over the valley. The earth here remembers me, takes me into her lap, covers me in her soft garments, moss and singing grass. The next poem is kind of a different kind of poem now. It's like an apologia for writing, and also I like to put men in their place. Calliope is, I'm having a little love affair with the Greeks, and Calliope, I've only written this poem about Calliope, but she's, you know, the muse, the
epic.
Yes, yeah, but also lyric actually, a lot. So anyway, this is Calliope. She knows someone is parsing her body, trying to decipher the rules by which she is put together. She knows someone is observing her principles of engagement as subject, working up a theory of how or if the head or heart moves. She feels someone's gaze, and the morphology of her limbs, her face, is searched for some logic of expression. Even the size of her thumbs, the shape of her fingernails, her teeth set into a formula of who she might be as she inflects her voice. She knows someone is secretly wondering how she is conjugated by tense and mood, assessing the aptness of her adverbs, her adjectives and nouns. And she, author, oracle, desires to be the shaper of her own truth, poet, not you. I suppose a lot, I know that I'm talking to a lot of writers here, I'm very conscious of that, and I suppose a lot of what we all do in writing is we kind of transform experience in some way to make it do other things for us. And the next poem is a kind of a poem like that. Pope had breast cancer. I should tell you as well that Agatha was an early Christian martyr who lost her breast. A source from the Vatican revealed last night that Her Holiness Pope Christine I had been diagnosed at the Gemelli clinic with a tumour in the inner quadrant of her left breast. Her doctors assured the faithful that her chances are good. Words whispered were stage 1 and contained. They were also keen to mention that she is praying to her favorite saint, Agatha. It is snowing in Rome. The pigeons are falling down in St. Peter's Square. There is one question on the blue lips of her partner. Will she be able to make her orbate orbi this year? The women of the world are looking for consoling words. Breasts heavy with feeding, sagging from gravity, prostheses in loco, all praying this night for the Holy Mother and Buffer Church. The next poem is taking an experience as well, in a different way, a similar kind of experience actually. And I suppose it's for anybody who's been sick, it's kind of they probably find resonances of this in their experience too. It's called My Doctor Rocks, coming to visit me after bilateral resection of tangled parts of my insides. I tell him his tie is a perfect match for his eyes. Must be the morphine shots. I want to tell him how wonderful he is to have undertaken this. Saved me. 2 years later, I pick up the phone, boldly ringing to say I had the baby against all the odds. I can feel a smile over the line, then mild dismay. He's already revising his paper on the complications of multiple teething in young females. This one is for Paul, because I know he lived in Galway for a short time. It's called Road Sign. As I drive down Taylor's Hill on a gloomy summer afternoon, a cloud of rain pushing down the bonnet like a sulking friend. In the distance, I see roadworks. A man alternating a large lollipop stick to signal stop or go. When I get up close, he bows and smiles, shows me red. But instead of feeling annoyed at having to wait, I feel grateful for his white teeth gleaming, his face beaming in the thunder sky of July. Then I notice his skin and his Ronaldo cap, muse that perhaps he is relieved to be away from the 40 degrees in Rio de Janeiro. I feel like I am Mary Tyler Moore, or Rhoda, and he is Carlton, my doorman, somehow turning the world on with a smile. He's taking on a mission to cheer up a nothing day. Galway strung out by a European monsoon. He's offering a few moments of meditation, this high priest of the road. As he flicks the road sign to green, I am infused with the mañana feeling. And even as I run around this city all go, I know something happened at the stop today. As I pull away, I feel his benediction fall. His obsidian eyes under his peaked cap, satisfied by having saved another soul with his crook and staff. I am sure I hear him singing, "You're going to make it after all." Now, I don't know how you feel down in here in Cork about Douglas, but you know, we kind of get a bit complex about it all in Galway.
Foreign affairs.
And this poem, which was the poem that won the Hinson, is kind of about that. It's about the relationship between Dublin and the rest of Ireland. And it started off with a very angry rant that about a person, a real person. But it developed into this poem, and I began to get a little bit of respect for the rant. So you can probably still feel the rant in a little bit. In other words, I'd like to glass your postmodern grin with a labiodental fricative to begin, then a bilabial plosive. God knows what would come out if I started to use my west of the Shannon round vowels, which you were colonizing. As you purse your lips to front yours, I notice that it goes very well with your chic about town suit. You speak foreign D4 to the men in my parts who respect sibilants that don't make a difference. Know that stop is surprise, not a rural marker separating them from the wise fellas up at the university. Or a noun, something that would do, they would do to sort out a poser like you. You flex your intellectual biceps, obsessed not only by your manhood, but by the kind of man you are, the genre, an obtrusive voice, your life, a metafiction, a revised identity. Now, your grandmother, a professional woman, who walked to school from May to October in her bare feet, is unsure about her story. It is not one of the images you are staying with today. Your voice echoes in the 1970s box architecture of the new Irish university, hollow as Plato's cave. The sign of the times, no more than the minute silence for Guinness, for Irish before the singing of the national anthem. The men in my part still check the sky for the weather, are ensconced in a world that loves them, will turn up at the funeral, pay respects to one of the best. You wish your words had meaning like theirs. It's what you left behind. Men pulling their wellies up over wool socks to go out on the land, while you lace up your expensive trainers to jog on an asphalt running track. You can hear the chirping of a bird coaxing you back to your senses. It would be too much like innocence to know whether it is a lark in the morning, a sparrow chattering, or a robin claiming territory. You put up the volume, adjust your earphones, check the zapper for the electric gauge that's in your pocket. Home is only a block away. Well, when we're in rant mode, maybe I can rant another little bit. This is a poem about the Celtic tiger moon. And I suppose I was a bit of a Celtic tiger moon myself. And it has as its backdrop the legend of me, or just, you know, kind of a bit of a trope to work with it. Called Bull. Maeve's a legend. Runs around in her chariot 4x4, picks up the kids from school, each one of seven in training to outdo the fellas next door. A competitive parent type. A woman to best any man. Wife and businesswoman of the year. She answers clients' calls, yet has a wash-in. Dinner in the oven, an invoice filled, iron in hand, the kettle on. When there's strife, she knows to take the bull by the horns. Woe betide the man who raises himself to her size. Her old boyfriends drop to the floor as she settles all scores. When she goes out, she's a tonic. And when she croons, drink to me only with thine eyes. Her husband teases her that the boss during the day is not the boss at night. Even if she runs out of biofuel, she revs up to put manners on him. It's the Thorn Boculia all over again.
Um,
The next two poems are kind of poems where I used the lyric I to really talk about someone else's experience, and I don't think that's something you can do easily, because you have to know somebody's experience to do it. And I did know this person who was in my family. It's called I Am the Woman Who Took the Veil, who in the year of our Lord 1942, at the age of 16, my mother weeping at the door, my father unable to say goodbye, entered the Presentation Convent in Galway, who made the best of hard times, a way to be educated through vows, left the rudeness of country life for parlours, haggards from manicured gardens, who wept though for my mother's flowers at the south gable, who tried to bring all at home up in the world one rung at a time, cajoling, advising, keeping in touch, who could not know touch, only the feel of a wimple, gabarding, cotton, winter wool, who was tortured by loneliness, sacrificed, could not go home to bury a mother or friend, had to wait for reports of how it all happened, imagine the scene, who worked by day at school, who didn't like punishment, believed in Mother Nuigia, my mother's mantra in my ears, who did the Legion of Mary visitation, emptied slops and chandelier for the infirm, like mother and father at home, whom I could not visit, the room said no. Who visited the home place after Vatican II, the old kitchen strange and new, echoing the absence of my father and mother, my brother and wife, trying to understand how a cage of manners held tears back. Who had it hard, measured pain all the same as something good, suspected the soft life, knew how easy it was to substitute self-pity for love, who looks to the young to tell my story, although I am a woman of my time, tired now, ready to go, a lone survivor in my convent home, who will persevere to the end, believing that with the help of God and His Holy Mother, it will all make sense, who will leave no one weeping over my tired grave in the garden like a canal, only a heron rising from silence on a winter's day, a robin stopping to check the disturbed clay, long shadows in the glass house, my cushions lined up on the south wall. The last poem I'm going to read from the book, and then I'll read you a few recent poems, is called Last Rites. And it's about moving house, which I just loads and loads of times. So this is the last time I moved house. Last Rites. We go from room to room to say our goodbyes and thank yous. My son stops at the shrine of his childhood and listens for echoes of bedtime stories and voices he gave Action Men and Transformers. We go to the main bedroom where family was an overcrowded bed in the middle of the night. And when there were four and one fell out, he went instead to the box room, slept among books and notes, grateful for rest. The kitchen and garden we bless, a marketplace of exchange between us and the world. We thank it for its measure and for contracting in on us when the world went out. We implore that the neighbour stop snoring and that the man in the house which overlooks ours will avert his eagle eye. That the feral cat scaling the walls of the garden will stop raiding bins and caterwauling. When we close the door and drive away, we have already given back the space. The naked walls quiet and indifferent, ready for someone else to adorn. Yet something niggles. What if the house misses us? If the walls are heavy and sad, justified by our actions. Okay, I'm going to. How am I doing time with?
I'm sure good.
Okay, well, maybe you need a cheering up now. I don't know if you ever heard, and there are a good few young people here who have never heard how the devil used to go to the dance hall all the time. But I did when I was a child, and this made a huge impression on me. And this poem is about that. And it's about a place in Mayo where, when I was a child, the devil was supposed to have appeared. And it's kind of, in researching this poem, I went online and I found an article which told a story, which it was a newspaper article reporting this. So I kind of used that as the backdrop for the poem. And Gran, was the devil in the pontoon on that evening in June? You said. If I didn't mind your saying that you looked your best in your polka dot dress when he took you gallantly to the door, to a place you raised your eyebrows you had never been before. Red was your favourite colour, blazing lights above the duller grey of the country dance hall, to which you came, you said, to have a ball. You told yourself a bit of fun. You'd give a chance to this one. Too smarmy, too suave, smells of danger, your girlfriends warned you not to trust this stranger, but you still got into the black limousine. He never stepped on your foot when he danced, so you didn't look down. Now when he stepped on the accelerator, you saw the moves. Your friends got there sometime later. You were lying on the roadside in a mess, burn holes in your polka dots, your hair untied, a large black goat by your side, they said, a smell of charred grass. And all you could think of was that he lied, and that he could have lain with you. The devil could have taken you. Okay, well, I'm not going to leave you very happy for very long. I had a beautiful dog, and she was a Bernese mountain dog, and she came from Cork, and I loved her. And when she was 14 months old, something very tragic happened. And this poem is in that, and this is the anthologized poem. And it kind of has as a backdrop the myth of Cassandra, and who was kind of the prophetess of doom. And I kind of went through feeling terrible after this incident because I felt I'd drawn down something on her by calling her Cassie. Dire consequences. Cassandra. I gave her the name, refused the metaphor. Each day has its own supremacy of best laid plans, yet. She came, she was called, walked across the road, the lift. The lorry, the second out, slid and dragged her into timelessness. The hours after seemed as before. She lies like Cordelia, I weep like Lear. Wonder if there was a choice of outcomes in that moment. It took the road 2 days to bleed from the thaw. We shook wood shavings on it, not seeds to make it something else, so she might rise like a phoenix from the snow. Who would believe she was never meant to go? Something is happening inside my tense, fragile skin that gives me warning of the future. Okay, I don't know if I need two more. This poem is about a woman who lived through the Second World War, and she's very interesting, and she, there are diaries that she wrote that but she didn't live through it because she died. She died in Auschwitz. But she's very interesting because she made a very important kind of journey in her life. I suppose like a spiritual journey from in a very short period. And she recorded all this in her diaries. And this poem kind of looks at some of the facts about her life and tries to relate them. And I don't know if it works or not. It's called Etty Hillison, 1914 to 1943. If sanity were dependent on balancing heart and spirit on a tightrope between two lovers, then you were saying, you claimed to have discovered God as you sounded the depths between them. You were never dismayed by all you held in the embrace of the dark when you fell on your knees on the floorboards grateful for your life. The breathtaking insights you had night after night as you cycled along the canal from Spears to Wiggles. Still jasmine in your nostrils as you took your clothes off and put them on behind both doors. Did a day come when you were strung out after and before? The vital mantra that rose within you had no logic. Nothing would stop you from believing in inviolable love. Later it made it possible for you to carry all at the camp who would suffer and die, as you would, and as you had chosen to, accepting contradiction as a principle for being alive, and singing as best at the point of death. This is the last poem I read, and thought that it is kind of a parting shot. We often say, we use this phrase, that you're in my thoughts. So I kind of took that and travelled with it. So thank you very much for having me down to read, and you're in my thoughts. You are in my thoughts, parading all your secret selves like a seasoned impresario, exploring a repertoire of rooms well beyond the promises of handshakes and smiles. You race up and down this forest of desires, sometimes in the skimpiest attire, and not just at night. When we meet, we are polite, deference. It's as if for one moment you escaped out of my thoughts to say you were in there and that it was good. Later, as I read your text, I feel panic when you sign off, reassuring me that I am in your thoughts and prayers. I wonder how and where. Thank you very much.